Today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 3. Chapter 3 is entitled Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. And today we are reading verse 10. Panchama Kapilo Nama. Panchama Kapilo Nama.
Panchama Kapilo Nama.
Siddhesha Kala Viplutam. Siddhesha Kala Viplutam. Provacha Suraye Sankhyam. Provacha Suraye Sankhyam.
Provacha Suraye Sankhyam.
Tatva Grama Vinirnayam.
Tatva Grama Vinirnayam.
The fifth one, Kapila, Kapila, Nama, of the name, Siddhesha, the foremost among the perfect, Kala, time, Viplutam, lost, Provacha, said, Asuraye, unto the Brahmana named Asuri, Sankhyam, metaphysics, Tattva Grama, the sum total of the creative elements. Vinirnayam, exposition. Translation. The fifth incarnation, named Lord Kapila, is foremost among perfected beings. He gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana, for in course of time this knowledge had been lost. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sum total of the creative elements is 24 in all. Each and every one of them is explicitly explained in the system of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is generally called metaphysics by the European scholars. The etymological meaning of Sankhya is that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. This was done for the first time by Lord Kapila, who is said herein to be the fifth in the line of incarnations. Om Agyanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Nipam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Virim Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So today we are reading about the fifth incarnation named Lord Kapila. Now in this chapter, from the beginning, Sukadeva Goswami has started narrating various incarnations of Lord Krishna. And he will continue this till we reach the 28th verse of this chapter, which is actually called the Paribhasha Sutra of the Bhagavatam. It's the most important verse of the Bhagavatam, which is Ete Chamsa Kala Prumsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. So all these incarnations Sukadeva Goswami will keep narrating, and then he will establish that just as There are waves or rivulets in a river. There are waves in the ocean. Similarly, there are multifarious incarnations of the Lord. But the source of all these incarnations is one, which is Krishna. He establishes that Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the fountainhead of all these incarnations. So we see it started with the four Kumaras, which on which Jagatarini Mataji gave a class, and then it continued. There is the incarnation of Narad Muni, which is mentioned previously. Also the incarnation of Bor, which is mentioned. The incarnation of Narnarayan Rishi was already mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami. And today the incarnation of Lord Kapila is mentioned. So this Lord Kapila, about Lord Kapila, there is lots in detail given in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The whole Sankhya philosophy is once again propounded by Sukadeva Goswami towards the end of the third canto, wherein actually Kardama Muni and Devahuti had, I think, 9 daughters. And once all the daughters were settled, Kardama Muni was ready to leave home. And Devahuti then inquires from Kardama Muni that, you are leaving home, but what will happen to my welfare? Who will deliver me from this material world, from this cycle of birth and death? And so then Kardama Muni blesses Devahuti with a son, who is none other than the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, Lord Kapila. And as soon as Lord Kapila is born to Devahuti, Kardama Muni immediately leaves home to take sannyas and to wander around the earth, spreading the names of Lord and also perfecting his own Krishna consciousness. So as soon as Kapila Dev was, he grew big, Mother Devahuti inquired from him about the perfection, how to perfect her human form of life. And that is when Kapila Dev Muni sits and explains the whole Sankhya philosophy to Devahuti, just to deliver his mother. Kapila Dev speaks the whole Sankhya philosophy. So we see that every incarnation which comes of the Lord, there is a specific purpose to that incarnation. The Lord comes in a specific form and he has a specific purpose. And there are so many different types of incarnations, like Purijan Prabhu was mentioning on Sunday, there are the Leela avatars of the Lord, where they come just to perform a particular pastime and then they wind up the pastime and they go back. Then there are the Yuga avatars, which come in every Yuga, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga and Kali Yuga. Then there are various, the three Purusha avatars, the Karuna Dakshai Vishnu, Garbho Dakshai Vishnu and Shiro Dakshai Vishnu. And then there are the Manvantaras, the Shakti Avesha avataras. Like that, there are so many incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And each and every incarnation is fulfilling a specific purpose. So, for example, the Boar incarnation came to actually lift Mother Earth. Mother Earth had been plunged into the Netherlands below Rasatala. And Boar incarnation comes to pluck her out of there and put her back in her orbit. And then we see Narad Muni. Narad Muni's incarnation is just to propound the cult of Bhakti Yoga throughout the world. He is chanting the Lord, names of Lord Narayan, and he is propounding that. So some people are attracted to different Leelas, and therefore the Lord comes as Leela avataras. And some people have an inclination or taste for metaphysics. So Lord Kapila came just to satisfy that aspect of Krishna consciousness, wherein people might be interested in understanding the metaphysics side, like how is the material creation, what are these 24 elements, what is the function of each element. So he explains in great detail the metaphysics of the material world. But as originally he speaks the message to Mother Devahuti, but then in due course of time, as it says here, the message had been lost. And Prabhupada mentions, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions in his purport, that in due course of time there was a fake Kapila who came up. And this fake Kapila is none other than this Asuri Brahmana who is mentioned in this verse. So he came up and he was actually a Mayavadi. He was an Advaita from the Advaita school. So he started propounding the false Sankhya philosophy. And then we see again Kapila Dev Muni is trying to re-establish, according to this verse, he is again trying to re-establish the knowledge, the Sankhya philosophy, the true Sankhya philosophy which was lost. So Prabhupada mentions, time and again Prabhupada mentions that whenever there are these fake incarnations or these fake people who try to take away the true message away of Maya, and they try to establish the principles of Mayavad, or they try to establish some Asuric principles, then the Lord again comes to completely smash this Mayavadi philosophy. Either he himself comes, like you know Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he was so much against the Mayavadi philosophy. Or the Lord sends some of his incarnations to smash this philosophy, or some of his representatives who will smash this philosophy. So today is the appearance day of Madhavacharya, and he was one such personality whose descent in this material world, the purpose of his descent was mainly to smash this Mayavadi philosophy. And we thought we'll spend some time on speaking about Shripad Madhavacharya, because we are actually greatly indebted to Shripad Madhavacharya. He is one of the founder acharyas of our sampradaya. We belong to the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually took initiation in the Madhava Sampradaya. And Madhavacharya started, like, from Brahma the Sampradaya was coming down, and then Madhavacharya propounded or took this Sampradaya further. So he is one of our great spiritual forefathers. And it is actually very difficult to speak about such eminent personalities or such elevated personalities. But just as a bird tries to fly in the vast unlimited sky and it just reaches up to whatever height is possible for the bird, similarly we will try to speak a little bit about the life of Srimad Madhavacharya, mainly for our purification. Because it is said that on these holy days, on either the appearance day or the disappearance day of these great personalities, if we hear about them or if we speak about them, there is so much potency on this day that they give extra or special blessings. These personalities are in merciful mood and they give special blessings, and that really purifies our hearts. So we will try to speak a little bit about the glories of Shripad Madhavacharya, who is the founder acharya of our sampradaya. So Shripad Madhavacharya is an avatar of Vayu. And there were two previous avatars of Vayu which came before Madhavacharya came in Kali Yuga. Hanuman, who came in Treta Yuga, was also an avatar of Vayu. And then Bhima, who came in Dwapar Yuga, was also an avatar of Vayu. And both these personalities were great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hanuman, as we all know, was a great devotee of Ram. And Bhima was all the Pandavas, not only Bhima, all the Pandavas were great devotees of Lord Krishna. And then in Kali Yuga, the third incarnation of Vayu came as Shripad Madhavacharya. So he was born, his parents were of the Shivali Brahmin caste, and they used to live in the South Kannada district. In the earlier days, Karnataka was called as Kannada or Kannada district, it was called as. So his parents used to live in a place called Prajaka Kshetra, which was around 8 miles from the holy town of Udupi. So many of you must be aware of Udupi, which is the headquarters of the Madhava Sampradaya. So they used to live around 8 miles in this small town called Prajaka Kshetra. And he was born, Madhavacharya was born in the year 1238. So for many, many years, his parents, his father's name was Madhyageha and his mother's name was Vedavati. For many years, his parents did not have a child. They kept trying, but somehow the Lord had not blessed them with a child. And the parents were getting quite depressed and frustrated because they were not getting a child. So then Madhyageha decided that he will perform austerities in order to beget a very good child who is a devotee of the Lord. So for many, many months, he performed austerities, Madhyageha. He used to go to the Ananteshwara temple. And this temple is even a very holy pilgrimage site for the Madhavas even today. It is still there in their town of Udupi. So he used to go every day. He used to walk those 8 miles. He used to go every day to this Ananteshwara temple. And he used to perform austerities over there. He used to perform yajnas and then he used to do the puja. And for many, many, for a long time he did these austerities. And then once there was a big festival of Ananteshwara being celebrated. And the Vijayamurti, usually during festivals, the Vijayamurti of the presiding deity is brought out on a palanquin. So the presiding deity of Ananteshwara was going around in a palanquin. And somehow Lord Ananteshwara inspired the pujari to speak. So he used the pujari as an instrument to speak. And in the whole assembly, this announcement the pujari made. The pujari said that in due course of time, a very, very empowered person is going to be born in this town. And he will be an incarnation of Vayu, and he will come to re-establish the religious principles. The principles which have been somehow distorted. So he will come to re-establish these religious principles, and he will be an incarnation of Vayu. So Madhyageha somehow, Madhavacharya's father somehow understood that this message was for him. So very soon his wife delivered a boy, and they named him Vasudev at birth. And this boy was endowed with all the qualities which a Mahabhagavat would have. It said that a Mahabhagavat has 32 qualities. So this little boy Vasudev was endowed with all the 32 qualities of Mahabhagavat. And from infancy, just as a great acharya when he is born, it's not that, you know, he starts showing his pastimes only when he is big or something like that. From infancy, Madhavacharya started showing that he was not an ordinary human being, but he was an empowered incarnation of Vayu. So when he was a very small child, and he was just, you know how small infants just survive on milk. He was such a young child that nothing else but milk he could drink. So once his parents had to go out for some urgent work, his mother especially was not at home. She was called for some urgent work, and the maid servant was looking after Madhavacharya. And the child started crying so much because he was very hungry. So then he saw, and nearby there was a big stack of horse gram dal, which was lying over there. And the quantity was such that it was meant for many, many months of consumption for the family as well as for the, they had some cattle. So it was for feeding the cattle as well. So what this infant Vasudev does, because he was so hungry and his mother was not around, he just goes up to that mound of horse gram dal and he eats everything up. And when the mother comes back, she was so shocked. She in fact chastises the maid servant. She said, "You're not looking after him. How come he had so much?" And she was so worried. They called so many doctors. They thought something will happen to the child. Because if we see an ordinary infant, if that an infant will eat so much of this horse gram dal, it's actually a difficult dal to digest. So any infant would die or they would get some indigestion or something like that. But nothing like that happened to little Vasudev. He was completely fine, he was completely smiling, and he was absolutely in bliss. So this shows that he was not an ordinary child, because no ordinary child could eat such a big quantity of horse gram dal. Then on another incident, his parents were, the little child was, he had not even learned to walk properly. He was crawling around and little bit he had started to walk. And he just went out of the house one day and he disappeared. And the parents spent the whole day, the parents were devastated because after so much of austerities, Vasudev was born. And then they were devastated, where is he gone? And in that small town, they kept looking for him. Since morning he was lost and they kept looking for him. And ultimately, the parents found him in the evening. And where did they find him? They found him hanging from the tail of a ferocious, gigantic bull. So it seems this little Vasudev had been taking a ride on the tail of a bull all around the town of Pajaka Kshetra. So this was another of his empowered pastimes which he showed as a child. And then when little Vasudev was five years old, his parents performed the Upanayanam, the thread-giving ceremony for him. So once he was playing in the forest after his Upanayanam ceremony, and there was a demon which was still existing from the Mahabharata time. And it is said that this demon always wanted to take revenge from Bhima, because it seems Bhima was always known for thrashing all the demons during his stay on this earth. So this demon always wanted to take revenge from Bhima. So he was still existing till Kali Yuga. And this demon took the form of a huge, terrible serpent. And this demon was called as Maniman. So little Vasudev was playing in the forest, and this demon came and attacked Vasudev with all of his terrible anger and all of the terrible poison that this demon in the form of a serpent possessed. But what did Vasudev do? He was not at all perturbed, because he is none other than Bhima. So with his toe, he just crushed the head of the demon. He pressed the head down of the demon, and the demon's skull was smashed to pieces, and this way he delivered that Maniman demon. And then whenever his mother used to call him, like after this incident, his mother was calling out to him. So he was so attached to his mother that even if he is playing miles away and if his mother calls him from home, he would jump in an instant and he would be near his mother. Thus proving that he was actually actually Vayu or Hanuman, because Hanuman could do such feats of jumping from one place to another and jumping miles and miles across. So even little Vasudev, he was 5 years old, but as soon as the mother would call, he would jump across and be with her in an instant. So in his childhood itself, he had extremely good memory. He was endowed with such great intelligence that in a short span of time, he had memorized all the shastras. He had mastered all the shastras, he had memorized all the verses. And all the village people of Pajaka Kshetra were amazed to see the scholarship of this little boy. So when he was 8 years old, after he had completed his preliminary studies and he had mastered all the Vedas and all the Shastras, he left home and he went to Udupi, which was around 8 miles away from his village. And there he went to the temple of Ananteshwara, and in that temple there was a very great sannyasi called Achyuta Preksha living. So Madhavacharya went to him and he surrendered to him. And he took initiation from this Achyuta Preksha. So he became a brahmachari over there and he took initiation from him. And he started living with Achyuta Preksha. He did not want to go home. At the age of 8, he renounced his home and he started living with Achyuta Preksha as a brahmachari. And later on, he developed the inclination to take sannyas. At the age of 8 itself, he was so detached that he wanted to take sannyas. And he knew the mission for which the Lord had sent him. He knew he had to go out and spread the pure message of Vaishnavism, and he had to thrash the Mayavadi philosophy. So he immediately wanted to take sannyas. And his parents were so perturbed when they heard these news. In fact, they were not at all happy even when he was living as a brahmachari in Achyuta Preksha's ashram. So as we know, even in today, like in modern days, in Kali Yuga also we see, if a person expresses an interest to join the brahmachari ashram, there is so much resistance from the parents. The parents will somehow try to convince that boy not to join the brahmachari ashram and keep him at home. So similarly, little Vasudev's parents, they were so attached to him, so they did not want him to leave home and go, and specially take sannyas and renounce the world. So his father went all the way to Achyuta Preksha's ashram in Udipi, and he started convincing the child. He said, no, you can't take sannyas. You're our only son. Who is our hope in life? You cannot leave us and go away like that. So like that, he pleaded with him, he chastised him, he ordered him. Then they had a debate also on the Shastras, because his father was also a very great Brahmin, Shivali Brahmin. They had a debate. And it is said that Madhavacharya was so well-versed in Shastras that nobody could defeat him in debate. So he easily defeated his father in debate. So when his father tried all these means, begging, pleading, chastising, ordering, debating, nothing worked. So then ultimately he fell at the feet of little Vasudev. And he said that, I'm begging you, you please come back home. Don't take sannyas, don't live here. Please come back home. And then little Vasudev says, see, this is a very good prophecy. Because usually a father never pays obeisances to his son. An elder is not supposed to pay obeisances to a young person. And especially a father. But he said a father, only in one situation a father can pay obeisances to the son. And that is when the son is a sannyasi. So you are only giving this prophecy that I'm going to take sannyas since you're falling at my feet. But again, the father, you know, nothing works when a father doesn't want the child to go away from the home. So the father said, no, we have only one son. You are our only child. You can't leave us and go. So then little Vasudev tells his father, he says that, okay, if you have one more child, then will you let me take sannyas? And his father, you know how parents usually do with children, okay, baad mein dekha jayega. So the father says, okay, we'll see later on. But you come home now. So then because of Vasudev's blessings, the mother was blessed with one more child. So Vasudev had one more brother. She delivered one more baby boy. And then Vasudev went home all the way to Pajaka Kshetra, and he requested his parents. He said that now at least you allow me to take sannyas. You give me your permission. I need your blessings. You have another child now who will look after you. So allow me to renounce this world and go. But again, you know, the father had just agreed so that, you know, with time he can again win him back. So the father again was not giving permission. No, we can't allow you to take sannyas. They were so attached to Madhavacharya because Madhavacharya had such a charismatic personality. Everyone in the village of Pajaksha Kshetra was so attached to Madhavacharya. He was so humble. He had such a nice personality. So many good qualities. So again the father was not giving him permission. And then Madhavacharya thought, this is it. So he told his father that I'm giving you two conditions. Either you give me your permission and blessings to take sannyas, and sometimes you will see me as a sannyasi, you will see my face, or you will never see my face again if you don't give me permission. So then ultimately the father had to give permission and he had to give his blessings for Madhavacharya to take sannyas. So how heartfelt he gave the blessings is not told because obviously he was not very happy, but he gave permission to Madhavacharya to take sannyas. So then the news of him taking sannyas spread in the whole town of Udipi as well as Pajaka Kshetra. And since everyone was so loving, they used to love so much this little boy Vasudev, that everyone gathered to see the sannyas ceremony of little Vasudev. He was 12 years old at that time when he was taking sannyas from Achyuta Preksha. So everyone gathered and everyone was amazed to see the effulgence which was coming out of this child. And because he was an incarnation of Vayu, Hanuman and Bhima, his bodily structure was so nice. He was very strong, very nicely built body, very nice features. And so in spite of having so much tejas, he was very humble. So his whole personality was very pleasing. And when he walked up to his guru, Achyuta Preksha, to accept the danda, people were like totally captivated. He totally captivated their hearts and everyone was giving him heartfelt blessings when he was accepting the danda. So on the during sannyas ceremony, his Guru Maharaj, Achyuta Preksha, gave him the name Purna Pragya. So he became known as Purna Pragya from that day onwards. And as Purna Pragya, he started living with his guru and he mastered all the scriptures as a sannyasi. And once he had mastered all the scriptures, he decided that he has to start traveling and he has to start preaching this message of pure Vaishnavism. So his guru, Achyuta Preksha, saw that his disciple, Purna Pragya, is endowed with so much good qualities that he decided that he should become the next Mathadipati or he should become the next in charge of that ashram. So there was a ceremony performed to make Madhavacharya or Purna Pragya at that time to become the Mathadipati, like the head of the math or the head of the ashram. And during that ceremony, his guru, Achyuta Preksha, gave him also the name as Ananda Tirtha, because he was spreading so much bliss around him. He was so endowed with all good qualities. So he was also given the name Ananda Tirtha at that time. So as Ananda Tirtha, Madhavacharya started traveling. He first went on a pilgrimage to South India. So he went to Kanyakumari and he preached very strongly. He started manifesting his pastimes of preaching strongly against the Mayavadi philosophy, because that was the main purpose of coming down in this world, to thrash the Mayavadi philosophy completely. So he started preaching very strongly against Mayavadi, and the Mayavadis were very scared of him, because wherever he was going, he was able to defeat the Mayavadis very easily. So when he went to Kanyakumari, they sent one of their greatest scholars to debate with Purna Pragya. And when this scholar came and started debating, he was known to be undefeatable. Nobody could defeat this Mayavadi scholar. But when he started debating, they had debate for days and days. And then ultimately Purna Pragya completely defeated him and smashed the whole philosophy. So his mission was to smash all the misconceptions of Shankaracharya. And the Mayavadis were becoming so scared, because so many Mayavadi followers, so many Shankarite followers, because of Madhavacharya's preaching, they were getting converted to Vaishnavism and they were becoming his followers. And they were also all traveling with him. So after touring Kanyakumari, he then went to Srirangam, to the holy place of Sri Rangam, which is the hub of Sri Ramanujacharya. And there also he smashed all the Mayavadis. And hundreds of people were becoming his followers. And one of the closest followers of Sripad Ramanujacharya was known as Satya Tirtha. He was a very, very qualified disciple, and he used to go everywhere with Madhavacharya. So although Madhavacharya, like we wonder sometimes that how in Srirangam also he was doing this activity, because Srirangam is actually the hub of Vaishnavism. But although Madhavacharya adored and honored and respected Sripad Ramanujacharya, who had come a few hundred years before him, still he felt that Ramanujacharya had been quite lenient with the Mayavadis. He had not smashed the Mayavadi philosophy enough, Sripad Ramanujacharya. And therefore, Madhavacharya took that mission upon himself to completely annihilate the Mayavadi philosophy. So he thought that I must write lots and lots of books, because like Prabhupada says, books are the basis. He said that if I write lots of books, then only people will read them and they will understand the true essence of Vaishnavism. So he went back to Udupi after his preaching in Kanyakumari and Srirangam. And then he decided to visit Badri Kashram to meet the guru of his heart, who is none other than Vedavyas. He wanted to go to Badri Kashram and he wanted to take blessings from Vedavyas to, you know, start his mission of writing books against Mayavadi philosophy. So he went with his disciple Satya Tirtha, and they were walked all the way barefoot from Udupi right till the the snow-capped mountains of Himalaya. And there at the base of the Himalayas, there is a temple of Badri Kashram. It's called as Badri Vishala. And in that temple, Madhavacharya sat and performed austerities continuously for 7 weeks. It is mentioned that he fasted. He did not eat at all for 7 weeks, because he wanted the blessings of the deity of Badri Narayan or Badri Vishal before he went and met his guru, Vedavyas, because he knew you cannot meet the guru till he has the blessings. So he continuously fasted for 7 weeks. And at the end of 7 weeks, and he was alone in the inner sanctum sanctorium. All his disciples were outside. They were not allowed inside. So after doing his austerities for 7 weeks, the deity of Badri Vishal spoke in a loud voice, which even his disciples could hear outside. And the deity said that you have all my blessings. You please write your commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita, and you please write your own commentaries on the Brahma Sutras and the Vedanta Sutras. And you have all my blessings for it. So having taken the blessings of Badri Narayan, then Madhavacharya proceeded. And Vedavyas used to live in a place called Uttara Badri, which is called as the uppermost peaks of Badrikashram. And reaching that place was so difficult because that path was very difficult and it was completely covered with snow. So he thought that he should walk alone. He should not take any of his disciples there because they might not be able to come till there. But his disciple Satyatirtha, who was his foremost disciple and who was so attached to his Guru Maharaj, he insisted, no, no, I have to come with you. I have to be there to serve you. You cannot leave me and go. So Satyatirtha and Madhavacharya started walking. And Madhavacharya is Bhima, he is Vayu. So he has so much strength that he was very easily able to walk fast, even though the track was so difficult to reach Uttara Badri. And Satyatirtha was not able to keep up. He was huffing and puffing and panting. And he was absolutely exhausted. And there was such a big distance. Madhavacharya was high up and he was still lagging behind. And then when Madhavacharya looked back, he felt very sorry for his disciple. So he thought that, no, I don't think Satyatirtha can make up this journey with me to Uttara Badri. So because he is an incarnation of Vayu, with just a sweep of his hand, he moved his hand towards Satyatirtha, and by the airways it is said, Satyatirtha travelled and in an instant he was at the bottom again, near the temple of Badri Narayan, along with his other god brothers. So he couldn't make the journey with Madhavacharya. And then Madhavacharya proceeded alone. And then ultimately he came to the summit of Uttara Badri, and there he met the guru of his heart, Vedavyas. Vedavyas was sitting in a meditation, and it is said it was such a beautiful pilgrimage site. It was such a beautiful ashram in which Vedavyas was living. So he fell at the feet of Vedavyas, and he completely surrendered his life to him. And then they had a long, and Vedavyas was also so happy to see Madhavacharya. He embraced him. And then they had a long discussion on all the philosophies like which Madhavacharya wanted to establish. And Vedavyas also gave him the blessings. Vedavyas told him, okay, you go and write the commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So based on these studies which Madhavacharya did with Vedavyas, he stayed for some time with Vedavyas and he studied surrendering at his lotus feet. So based on whatever studies he did with Vedavyas and whatever he personally heard from Vedavyas, Madhavacharya compiled his commentary on Brahma Sutra, and his Bhagavad Gita was compiled based on his discussions with Vedavyas. So he started his descent back to Udipi. And on the way, he took his disciples to the holy place of Kurukshetra. So in his incarnation as Bhima, he had, you know, the Mahabharata war had taken place over there. So he showed all his disciples various sites where he had fought as Bhima, and he had killed so many demons and he had killed so many of the Kaurava soldiers. And then he took his disciples to a corner of a very secluded field, and with his own hands he dug in that corner. And out came the club of Bhima, which Bhima used during his fights during the Mahabharata war. And the disciples were so happy, they were so amazed to see this club. So he showed them the club, and then he again put that club back in the ground. And to date, the club has never been discovered. But only Madhavacharya revealed that club to his disciples. So then they came back, he returned to his guru Achyuta Preksha. And Achyuta Preksha saw that Madhavacharya is really preaching something which is, again, because Achyuta Preksha was from the Mayavadi school. He was a Shankarite. He believed in the Advaita philosophy of the Lord. So he was actually very displeased with his disciple. He said, what is this you're spreading? Everything is one. You know, we have to preach about oneness, and you're completely smashing that philosophy and you're spreading something else only. So Achyuta Preksha was not very happy. But somehow Madhavacharya then preached to him, and Achyuta Preksha actually became his disciple later on. And Madhavacharya initiated his own guru. And Achyuta Preksha was so humble that, you know, he accepted that, yes, this is an incarnation who has come to spread the philosophy of pure Vaishnavism. So Achyuta Preksha accepted Madhavacharya as his guru. But of course, you know, this is a pastime which cannot be imitated, because Madhavacharya is not an ordinary person, or he was not an ordinary human being. He was none other than Vayu himself, and he had come, he had been empowered to establish Vaishnavism in the world, and therefore this pastime took place of Achyuta Preksha accepting Madhavacharya as his guru. So again, once again, after preaching for some time and gathering thousands of followers, he once again made a trip to Vedavyas in Uttara Badri. And that time, Vedavyas gave him a Shaligram Shila during his second visit to Uttara Badri. He gave his own Shaligram Shila, which Vedavyas was worshipping for years and years. He gifted it to Madhavacharya and he said that you worship the Shaligram Shila with so much devotion and very high standards. You worship the Shaligram Shila. And even today, these Shaligram Shilas are being worshipped. And his sannyasis are following a very high standard, his sannyasi disciples. They are very attached to these Shaligram Shilas and they are still worshipping the Shilas with very high standards. And during this second visit, Vedavyas gave Madhavacharya the blessings to write a commentary on Mahabharata. Because even the Mahabharata commentary, so many commentaries were coming up and people had totally distorted the meaning of Mahabharata. So he gave him the blessings, you write your commentary on Mahabharata and various other scriptures. And with these blessings, actually Madhavacharya came back and then he wrote his commentary called the Tatparya Nirnay on Mahabharata. And in fact, Aditya wrote a small pastime for the folk news. So we see how, you know, based on the Tatparya Nirnay, we see that how, you know, things get distorted. And nowadays in Kali Yuga, we see, especially in India, even I had heard as a child, how much Karna, like I will just describe one episode from the Tatparya Nirnay, how it is so important to read the commentaries of bona fide acharyas. So we all know about Karna. Now Karna, sometimes in India especially, Karna is glorified. Karna was the greatest danvir. He was the greatest person who gave charities. And Karna was so this, Karna was so that. So much of qualities of Karna are glorified. And he was born with kavacha and Krishna really cheated him. They took his kavachas off. Like, there are so many things which are said bad about Krishna and the Pandavas, and Karna is glorified in so many places. But actually this Karna, Madhavacharya writes in his Tatparya Nirnay, his commentary on the Mahabharata, this Karna was a demon in his previous life. And he, as that demon, he performed lots and lots of austerities, thousands of years of austerities, to get the blessings of Lord Brahma. And then Lord Brahma comes and gives him blessings, and he asks for immortality, like most of the demons ask for. And Brahma says that, no, even I am not immortal, how can I give you immortality? And then he says, okay, you give me 1,000 kavachas, and please give me that blessing that nobody can smash this or remove these kavachas. And if even to remove one kavacha or to smash one kavacha of mine, that person should have performed 100 years of austerities. And after, even after doing that, let's say someone is qualified to smash one kavacha, after he smashes the kavacha, he will die. This is the boon which he asks from Brahma. And Brahma actually sanctions the boon. Okay, you can have that. So from that time onwards, because he acquired 1,000 kavachas, he came to be known as Sahasra Kavacha. From that time onwards. And as Sahasra Kavacha, this demon created havoc because he knew he was almost invincible. Who is going to now kill him? There is nobody who has performed austerities for hundreds of years, and even if they try to kill him, people knew if they try to remove one Kavacha also, they are going to lose their body. So he started creating havoc, and then everybody as usual rushed to Brahma for help. And then Brahma came to Narnarayan Rishi in the same Badrikashram where Vedavyas was living. And he told Narnarayan Rishi to do something about this demon, Sahasra Kavacha. So Narnarayan Rishi, they very intelligently performed penances in Badrikashram in the summit of Himalaya. And it is said that one day of penance in the summit of Himalayas in Badrikashram is equal to 100 years of penance. So this is the trick which Narnarayan Rishi used. So when Sahasra Kavacha came to know of that, he came to fight with them. So what they used to do, one day Nar will perform the austerity. And then at the end of that austerity, he would have acquired the boon, the blessing of performing 100 years of austerity. And then he would go and smash one kavacha. And then he would die. Apparently he would die because that was the boon given to Sahasra Kavacha. And the next day, because of Narayan's austerity, he would revive him. And next day Narayan would go and smash one kavacha. Like that they kept taking turns, Narnarayan Rishi. And they at the end of 99 kavachas, they had completely destroyed all the 99 kavachas of Sahasra Kavacha. And then he got really scared, this demon. So he went to Surya for help and he prayed to him. He said, you save me, they are going to kill me, my 99 kavachas are gone and only one more kavacha is left, what should I do? So Surya requests Narnarayan Rishi. He says that this demon will be born as Karna in his next life. You spare this one kavacha on him. He will be born as Karna in his next life and you all both will be born as Krishna and Arjuna in your next life. And at that time then you all can complete the duty of killing him. So actually the presence of Kavacha on Karna's body is not that he was very pious and he had acquired this Kavacha, but it shows that he was a demon in his previous life. And then when Narnarayan Rishi came as Krishna and Arjuna, they then killed, like both of them together, they killed Karna. So we see, like in India, so many bogus philosophies are going around that Karna, you know, he was cheated and his kavacha should not have been taken and all these things. But when we read the commentaries of true acharyas, we come to know that the true meaning, that he was actually a demon and he had to be killed by Narnara and Rishi, Krishna and Arjuna. So once when he was going to Badrikashram, he was on his way to Badrikashram. There are many pastimes which happened when he was going, traveling to Badrikashram. So once while he was going, there was a Muslim king in one of the provinces which he had to travel through. And this Muslim king was so ferocious and so demoniac that whoever passed through his province, he would make his soldiers capture that person. And the king wanted to build a big, big lake because there was a drought in his kingdom. So he wanted to dig a big lake. So whoever used to pass through the kingdom, the soldiers used to capture that person and make them dig the lake. So they did not even spare Madhavacharya. He was going as a sannyasi with his followers, and usually sannyasis should not be engaged in work like digging lakes and all. But the soldiers did not heed to that, and they just caught Madhavacharya and they said, "You have to dig a lake." So Madhavacharya said, "No, I want to meet your king. I'm not going to start digging a lake unless I meet your king." And the soldiers warned him. He said, no. They said, "Don't go and meet the king. He's so terrible that he will kill you if you go and try to meet him." But Madhavacharya insisted, no, I have to go and meet the king. And because Madhavacharya's personality was so charismatic, the soldiers totally agreed. Their hearts melted. And they said, okay, they took him to the king. And Madhavacharya preached to the king the pure principles of Vaishnavism for a long time. And the king was so inspired by this humility and by the effulgence of Madhavacharya that he became totally subdued. And then Madhavacharya told him, he said that actually, you know, even in great scriptures, even in your scriptures it is written that whatever a leader does, the follower must do. So if a leader wants some work to be done, he should actually set a personal example and then only the followers can do that work. So he said that therefore if you want your followers, if you want us to dig the lake, you should personally first show us because you have to set a good example. So the king was so convinced by then with Madhavacharya's philosophy, he said, yes, what you are saying is true. And this king who was known to be so terrible to all the subjects, he actually took a spade and he started digging the lake. And because of Madhavacharya's potency, the king could not stop digging the lake at all. He could not, even though he was just meant to show them how to dig the lake, but he couldn't stop. He couldn't stop himself. And Madhavacharya and his followers continued on their way to Badrikashram. And then in another province they went through, there were so many fights going on between the Hindus and Muslims. And the two provinces, one Muslim province and the Hindu province, were divided by a river. So this Muslim king was also so, he was doing so many atrocities that he had stopped any boats from coming from the Hindu side kingdom to this side. No boats were allowed to travel on the river because the Hindus would come this side of the kingdom. But Madhavacharya and his followers had to cross that river. They had, because it was on the way to Badrikashram. So all the Hindus told him, they requested Madhavacharya, please don't cross this river because on that side the king, whoever crosses over on that side, the king actually kills that person. So please, because they begged at Madhavacharya's feet, don't cross. But Madhavacharya, and they said there is no boat also because all the boats have been taken away by the Muslim king. So Madhavacharya said that, no, but I can't be stopped from going to Badrikashram. I have to cross this river. So it's okay if there's no boat. We will swim across the river. And Madhavacharya is Bhima. He's so strong and his followers also knew swimming. So they all swam and the river was very swift. There was a strong current in the river. But still all the followers and Madhavacharya swam across the river. And when they came out on the other side, in the Muslim province, the soldiers were shocked to see someone coming out of the river and realizing that they have swum and come. So they caught these people and they said, how did you come on this side? Nobody is allowed to come on this side. And Madhavacharya said that, no, I have to pass through your province because I'm on my way to Badrikashram. So the soldiers actually caught him and took him to the king. And the Madhavacharya spoke to the king in such eloquent Persian language. Actually, even the followers were amazed because they had never heard Madhavacharya speak this language before. But because of Madhavacharya's potency, he spoke in such fluent Persian language with the king, and he convinced him of his philosophy that the king was totally enchanted. He said that, oh Madhavacharya, good that you came to my kingdom and I'm so pleased with you that I want to give you half of my kingdom. This was the change of heart which happened in the king. And Madhavacharya said, no, I am not after any kingdom or any money. You keep your kingdom, just allow us to proceed peacefully on our way to Badrikashram. And then the king allowed them to go. So there was an erudite scholar of Mayavadi. His name was Pundarik Puri. And this because the Mayavadis are getting so scared, he was thrashing all the Mayavad philosophy. So they engaged this Pundarik Puri, who was known to be the best scholar of Mayavad school. And they engaged him to debate with Madhavacharya. And the debate went on for days and days. And what Madhavacharya used to do, he had a big library of books, of all the scriptures. And these scriptures were based on pure Vaishnavism. Not only his own books, but even different scriptures of different acharyas he had gathered. So what these Mayavadis did, they stole the whole library. Because during debates, Madhavacharya used to refer to these books and then he used to convince the opposite party of his points that were based on scriptural references. So the Mayavadis thought that if we steal his library, he will not be able to defeat this Pundarik Puri in debate. But Madhavacharya, since childhood, he had an amazing memory. So out of memory, he did not refer to the books because the books were gone. But just out of memory, he convinced that Pundarik Puri. And he totally smashed him and he made him his follower. But ultimately he wanted his books back. And because of his potency, he realized that these books are lying with one Shankarite king, who is the king of some province called Jaisingha. So he went there and he wanted to get his books back. So he pleaded with the king, "You please give my books back to me." And the king said that, "No, you have to. I want to understand your philosophy better. So for what you do is," he engaged his greatest scholar in his kingdom. His name was Sri Vikramacharya. He was his minister, the king's minister, and he was also the greatest scholar of the kingdom. So he said, "No, you first have a debate with my minister. And then if you are defeated, I will not give your books back. But if you are not, I will give your books back." So Madhavacharya and this Sri Vikramacharya had a debate. And since Madhavacharya's descent was to smash Mayavadi philosophy, he was able to completely convince Sri Vikramacharya. And Sri Vikramacharya became a follower of Madhavacharya. Even the king took initiation from Madhavacharya. And Sri Vikramacharya's son also became a follower of Madhavacharya. And Madhavacharya named him Narayan Acharya or Narayan Pandit. And this Narayan Acharya actually wrote the biography of Madhavacharya. It's called as Madhava Vijay. So Prabhupada actually gives a very nice life sketch of Madhavacharya in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in that life sketch, Prabhupada mentions, it's a brief life sketch Prabhupada gives, and Prabhupada mentions that whoever wants to know more about Madhavacharya should actually refer to this Madhava Vijay, which has been written by Narayan Acharya. It is a bona fide commentary, or it is a bona fide biography of Madhavacharya. So in this way, Madhavacharya kept defeating various scholars. And then once Madhavacharya was going along the beach of Udupi, there is a very nice sea near the beach of Udupi, and he was reciting beautiful songs. In fact, it is said that Madhavacharya was not only a very good poet, he used to write very beautiful poetry, he was a very good songwriter, he used to compose beautiful songs on Lord Krishna. He was a very good singer, he had such a sonorous voice. His kirtans, his singing used to enchant people for miles and miles. And also he was a very graceful dancer. So he used to love to perform kirtan and he used to love to dance in kirtans. And people used to get amazed when they used to watch Madhavacharya's dancing in kirtan. So once like this he was singing songs and going along the beach of Udupi. And he saw a boat coming. That boat was coming from Dwarka. So he saw this boat coming, but there was a storm going on in the sea. And the boat was almost going to overturn because it was such a huge storm and the captain of the ship could not carefully bring the ship to the shore. So what Madhavacharya did, he sat on the shore and with his chadar, he actually gave directions to the captain how he can safely bring the boat back to the beach or back to the shore. And following Madhavacharya's directions, the captain very safely steered the ship to the beach. And when he got off the ship, he was so indebted, he was so grateful to Madhavacharya. He said that, "You have actually saved my life. And I had so many riches on my boat. If the boat would have overturned, all my riches would have been lost. So you please take whatever you want from this boat. I can give you all my riches because you just saved my life." And Madhavacharya said that, no, I don't want any riches or I don't want anything from your boat. But in your boat, because you have come from Dwarka, there is a big block of Gopi Chandan. I just want that Gopi Chandan." So actually this Gopi Chandan, this captain of the ship had taken only to balance the ship. Because he had so many valuables and all that in the ship and you know the ship would have been imbalanced. So the Gopi Chandan was kept on one end just to give balance to the ship. So he says okay and he brings the Gopi Chandan to the shore. And Madhavacharya smashes open that big block of Gopi Chandan. And from within comes a beautiful deity of Lord Krishna. And all the followers, even the captain was amazed. He did not know such a nice deity of Krishna was there in this block of Gopi Chandan. So then Madhavacharya wanted that deity of Krishna to be carried into Udipi, and he wanted to install the deity of Krishna. But he engaged 30 men, but 30 strong men couldn't lift this deity off the shore. The deity was so heavy, none of them could lift. And then Madhavacharya came, because I think Krishna did not want to be lifted by ordinary people. He wanted to be lifted by his dear devotee. So then Madhavacharya came along, and very effortlessly he just lifted the deity of Lord Krishna and walked with him, personally carrying the deity of Lord Krishna all the way to Udipi to establish or to install the deity in the temple. And it is said that while he was walking with this deity of Lord Krishna towards the temple of Udipi, spontaneously he was composing very beautiful songs and very beautiful prayers. And even to this day, the true followers of Madhavacharya actually recite these prayers of Madhavacharya. And then he installed this deity in the temple of Udipi. And he appointed 8 sannyasis. They are called as the 8 Mathadipatis. So very qualified disciples of Madhavacharya. And he told them that you all have to worship this deity with very high standards. So Madhavacharya himself set very high standards. And he told all his sannyasi disciples that you all also have to worship this deity with very high standards for generations to come. And one unique thing about Madhavacharya Sampradaya is that, like we see in many Goswami temples and all, that the Sevite rites, the rites to perform seva of deities, are usually given by birth. So any Goswami who is born in the family, that son will worship, then the son will worship, the son will worship. So the Sevite rites stay within the family. Even if the person is not qualified, he automatically gets the Sevite rites. But Madhavacharya was not like that. For him, the right to worship the deity was given only to qualified sannyasis. So it is not that somebody is, you know, if some family is worshipping the deity, then their children will get the right. No. Only the sannyasis who were well qualified and who were well versed with the high standards of deity worship were allowed to worship the deities. So Madhavacharya's philosophy is known as Dvaita philosophy. He came to smash the Mayavadi philosophy, because Mayavadi philosophy is nothing but oneness. Everything is one. And Madhavacharya came to establish that nothing is one. He came to establish the Dvaita or the dualism philosophy. And therefore, whenever we see a photo of Madhavacharya, his two fingers are raised like this. So his philosophy is classified as the Pancha Bheda philosophy. Or there are 5 main angas or main points to his philosophy. So the first point is that there is a distinct difference between the Jivatma and the Paramatma. So duality means because he wanted to smash oneness so much that he established this duality or the distinction principle very strongly. So he established there is a distinction between the Jivatma and Paramatma. He said that this Paramatma is Vibhu and the Jivatma is Anu. And the Paramatma is Sachidananda Vigraha. The Paramatma is not formless, or he is not just Brahman like the Mayavadis were propounding. He said the Paramatma has a form. He is a personal deity. He is a personal God. And the Jivatma is Anu, and the Jivatma is eternally the servant of this Paramatma. So that is the first distinction he established. The second distinction of the Panchabheda philosophy he established was that there is the difference between 2 Jivatmas also. No 2 Jivatmas are also the same. Because the Mayavadi philosophy used to say, no, all of us will merge into Brahman, or all of us will become God. We are all one. We are all one. So he wanted to smash that also. So he said every jiva or every soul is endowed with different characteristics, different personality, different traits, and they can never become the same. They will eternally remain separate, and they will eternally remain the servants of the Lord. This was the second philosophy. The third philosophy of the Anga of Panchabheda was the difference between the Jivatma and material nature. And this was to smash, sometimes, you know, the scientists claim that everything has come from matter and everything will go back to matter. But he said, no, matter is the inferior prakriti of the Lord and jiva is the superior prakriti of the Lord. So there is a distinct difference. They are never the same. The jiva is actually superior. He is a pure spirit soul. And the matter is actually the inferior energy of the Lord, the Pancha Mahabhuta, which has been created by the Lord. The fourth difference, he said, was the difference between prakriti and Paramatma. So he said that the Lord is distinct and his creation is distinct. And the Lord never comes under the influence of his creation. He never comes under the influence of the 3 modes of material nature. He is always above them. Like Maya Dhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that this divine energy of mine is working under my control. So there is a distinction between the Paramatma and the Prakriti also. Paramatma never comes under the control of the Prakriti. That was the fourth difference he established. And then the fifth difference he established was that the difference between matter. No two matters are also the same. Even those are completely different. Every aspect of matter is different from each other. So this is the Panchaveda philosophy he established. And he said that everything is unique in God's creation. No two things are same or no two things are one. And this was his way of smashing the oneness philosophy. So he established the true principles of eternal servitorship to the Supreme Lord. And in this way he paved the way for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come. In fact, it is said once during his travels, he went to the island of Navadvip. He went to, I think, Godrumadvip with his followers. And there once while he was sleeping, Madhavacharya had a dream. And in his dream, the beautiful form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, the golden form of Gauranga came. And he told Madhavacharya, he said that, I'm so pleased you keep going ahead and smashing this philosophy, this Mayavadi philosophy of which is existing today. And you please establish the pure principles of Vaishnavism and establish that God is a person. And very soon I will myself appear and I will take initiation within your sampradaya. And I will glorify your sampradaya and I will take your teachings further. And when Madhavacharya woke up, he started crying in separation. He said, who is this golden form of the Lord? How, you know, he was so beautiful. When will I see him? When will I see him? Like that he started crying. And then again the Lord spoke, like he heard a voice. He said that very soon I will appear after you have gone and I will take initiation, he said. So you please go ahead and spread your philosophy. You have all my blessings for it. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhavacharya was paving the way for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to appear and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept initiation and take the philosophy of Madhavacharya further. So he lived, Madhavacharya lived till he was 79 years old. And once in the temple of Ananteshwara, he was giving a lecture. He used to lecture a lot from an Upanishad called Aitareya Upanishad. That was one of Madhavacharya's favorite books. So he was sitting and lecturing on that book. And suddenly there was a shower of flowers from the sky. And Madhavacharya just disappeared from the vision of all his followers. So he completely disappeared. And the chadar he was wearing, it just fell to the ground. And Madhavacharya was no longer there. So therefore there is no samadhi. If we go and see, like, there are samadhis of Ramanujacharya, but there is no samadhi of Madhavacharya. But this sitting place from where Madhavacharya disappeared is considered to be very auspicious, and all the Madhavas who live specially in Udipi, they daily go to this sitting place to pray. So this was some pastimes we wanted to share about Madhavacharya, and we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any comments or questions. Yes, ma'am. Even from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, if we see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also accepted sannyas. Although he took initiation in the Madhava Sampradaya, his sannyas guru Keshav Bharati was actually a Mayavadi. So even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, because it is said these Mayavadi sannyasis were so strong, like, you know, the sannyas, they used to follow the sannyas order very strongly. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also accepted sannyas from Keshav Bharati like that. And in Madhavacharya's life, we see that he accepted sannyas from Achyuta Preksha, who was a Mayavadi. But then ultimately he actually transformed him and he changed him from Mayavadi to a personalist or to Vaishnavism. So that is the glory of Madhavacharya, and maybe to perform that pastime he took sannyas from a Mayavadi guru so that he can show to the world that even though he was my guru and he was Mayavadi, now he has converted to Vaishnavism. So based on that example, many other people will be inspired to give up their Mayavadi thoughts and give up Shankarite philosophy and accept the philosophy of a pure Vaishnavism. I'm not sure of that, whether it will totally be smashed. I haven't read anywhere in the scriptures, whatever limited reading I've done. But one thing is there, that Krishna never interferes with the free will of the jiva. So it is the jiva's desire. There are some jivas who want to adhere to the Shankarite philosophy. And it is said that the philosophy was spread by Shankara. Shankaracharya, who is none other than Lord Shiva. And it is mentioned in the scriptures that he was instructed by Krishna to actually come down and spread this philosophy. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, I think in the third or fourth canto we had read, that Krishna instructed him that you should go and spread this philosophy, because there was so much of animal killing rampant in the name of Vedas at that time. So Shankaracharya had to come and establish that there is, you know, no Vedas, and he had to, Buddha had established that there is no Vedas because there was so much rampant animal killing. And Shankaracharya's mission was to re-establish the Vedas, because people had totally become atheists after Lord Buddha. Nobody was believing in, because that was Lord Buddha's purpose. He wanted to give up, people to give up animal killing in the name of Vedas. But people became atheists. That was the side effect of that preaching. So then the Lord sent Shankaracharya to re-establish, because Vedeshcha Sarve Raham Eva Vedyo, it is said in the Bhagavad Gita. So unless there are Vedas, if there are no Vedas only left, then how will people even realize the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna? So he came and established, he re-established the Vedas in the world. So every time the Lord sends an incarnation like that, it is to fulfill a specific purpose. And because he was none other than Lord Shiva, his philosophy spread so much and it has taken a strong hold in India especially. And therefore it is very difficult to uproot, and the Lord doesn't interfere with the free will of the Jiva. So that is why it is still prevalent. Even the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and smashed the Mayavati philosophy. But we see that after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and because of empowered representatives like Srila Prabhupada, so many people are taking to Vaishnavism now. Even in our recent South India Yatra we had with Radhanath Maharaj, we could see that so many people are taking to Vaishnavism now because Srila Prabhupada and his representatives are spreading the message. And it is said for 10,000 years this movement will be very strong. So maybe for these 10,000 years the effect of Mayavadi might be suppressed, Mayavadi philosophy. Who, Madhavacharya? In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's first time? No. Whether he came again as one of the personalities? We know that Murari Gupta is actually Hanuman. So maybe we can say that he is an incarnation of Madhavacharya, because Murari Gupta was Vayu or Hanuman, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to say. So, but I have never heard, maybe I have not read specifically it being mentioned that Murari Gupta was Madhavacharya only, but he is mentioned he was Hanuman. So Hanuman is, Madhavacharya is none other than incarnation of Hanuman or Vayu. So we can take it like that maybe. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.